All right.
Sorry about that.
Sorry about that.
Hey, no worries. Now we're all connected. And thanks for coming on and talking to me on the Eric Spahn Racing.com podcast. I believe this will be number 91. And we got Raymond in the background setting everything up. And we got Logan talking to us today. And just wanted to see how you're doing.
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. So you've been riding and racing for many years. Tell people a little bit about yourself for people who don't know.
I started out racing minis, then I moved up to racing at R3, and now I'm doing the North American Talent Cup.
Heck yeah. And the Talent Cup on the minis, those are the O-Valleys, the 110s, 160s, 190s?
No, it's the Aprilia RS250.
Okay, so you're in the 250s, and tell me how you like the Aprilia now.
Oh, we haven't got it yet.
So that's going to be the brand new bike to be on. So everything's going to be a little bit new.
Yeah.
And how do you think that'll compare to the R3 that you've been on?
I feel like it'll be a little bit lighter and easier to handle.
Okay. Very good. And so about how many rounds of the championship are there? How many events or weekends do you think there'll be this year?
Seven.
Seven of them. And you try to be pretty competitive, I guess, and there's, you know, practice and qualifying and everything. So sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I just want to go out there and do my best.
Yeah, for sure. And there's probably a lot of different competitors from all around the country that that do those kind of races.
Yeah, there's about 17 of us.
Okay. And a little bit of a traveling circus, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I was at the Barber with you guys when you were racing at the WERA Grand National Finals a couple of months ago in October. Looked like you were doing pretty good.
Thank you.
So you want to talk about some of your finishes or some of your races?
Overall this year, I did pretty good. Finished first a few times. Got podium a lot. I'm just happy with this year.
Yeah. And what are some of the things you're working on as a rider?
I'm just trying to work on my body positioning and corner speed. Just trying to get more comfortable on the bike.
Now, is that I assume you're pretty light, you're pretty young, so that you probably have a lot of wheelies out of the corner?
Not really, especially with how low the power is on the R3.
You just got to keep that momentum, right?
Yeah.
And keep that momentum through the corners and so that you can be as fast as possible down the main straightaway.
Yep.
And so where are you living now? What's your hometown?
Ohio.
You're in Ohio, so not too far from me. I'm in Michigan, just probably a couple hours north of you.
So we're football rivals.
Yeah, I'm not too much of a football fan, but my family is. My brother went to Michigan State, and I'm sure you guys are all Ohio State.
My family's kind of into football. Me, I'm more into racing.
Yeah. So you've been racing the two-wheeled stuff for a while. Do you ever get into go-karts for any training?
No, not really. I mean, I've rode around on them a few times. Pretty fun, but like to keep it on two wheels.
Yeah, so what does your training regimen consist of?
Mostly we do a few track days, and I do endurance racing, which consists of most of my training. So.
Yeah, and those endurance races, that's the WERA Nationals at the N2 with the 2 to 4 to maybe even 6 hour races.
Yep, there's a 2 hour and 4 hour race.
And are you sharing that with multiple riders, or are you doing that all yourself?
I'm doing the 2 hour endurance with one other rider.
That's quite a bit of track time. You can't get that much on track time in one instance very often. So that's probably very valuable feedback.
Yep.
And who's the other rider that you normally share those duties with?
Oh, this year it's going to be Heather Trees.
Heather Trees. And I think she's husband of Derek, or is it Jared Trees? Jared. And they've been riding and racing around for many years, so I'm sure that's somebody good to get some knowledge from.
Yep.
And what's it like racing with somebody else? Like, you have to change the bike, so it's kind of in between your settings. You might not be perfect for your ergonomics, but maybe a hybrid.
Yeah. This year we're going to be riding a different bike, though. We're going to be racing a 400 rather than a 300.
Okay, moving up to the 400 class. Do you think that's where that's a better bike to be on than the 300?
Yeah, because it's like the same bike as the R3. It just has more power on the straightaway.
And those probably are hitting 110 miles an hour at least nowadays, right?
Yeah, around that.
It's pretty quick, even for a lightweight bike.
Yeah.
Would you want it to be faster or slower, do you think?
Probably a little bit faster.
Everyone wants more power, right?
Yeah.
I just bought a new motorcycle myself. It's a Kawasaki 2021 KLX 300 Supermoto. So it's not exactly a full-on race bike, but it is already set up for a Supermoto with a little bit better suspension, and it's got the street tires on it. So I'm pretty excited to get that out and do some more riding with that on the track. And then my plan for that bike, I needed a street bike. This is my first time having a street bike in like 10 years. So I'm going to be doing some Motorcycle Safety Foundation coaching and getting people their license. So I'm pretty excited about doing that. But it's a pretty versatile bike, so you can use it on-road, off-road, a little bit of both.
Yeah, we have a DRZ.
You know, I was really considering the DRZ, but that's still carbureted, and this one's fuel injected, and it's a 300, so maybe the DRZ is still a little bit faster, but I'm going with the new technology, seeing how that goes.
Yeah, my dad let me try out his old technology, aka just the Gixxer 600.
Yeah,
I rode that around a few times.
I'm not hating on that old technology, I'm just if there's something more modern for almost the exact same price, I think I'm going to try to go the modern route, because if I take it like ice racing, maybe the conditions might be a little bit more harsh, and I feel like the fuel injection's maybe more reliable.
Yeah, it'll handle a little bit better.
You don't have to worry about the temperature as much, maybe. So I don't know, just something different. So I'm pretty excited about doing that. And I still have to get it, titled and licensed and all that, so I can ride it on the street, but it's just sitting in my garage waiting for me. So do you do a lot of running or fitness? What's your fitness plan so you can ride these bikes real fast?
I have a 2-hour trampoline class at my sister's gymnastics place that she goes to.
Yeah.
Every Tuesday and Thursday for 2 hours.
And that's probably pretty good. You probably work on some flexibility and jumping around, your strength and balance.
Yep.
And are you doing all kinds of flips and twirls and things like that?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I did gymnastics a long time ago when I was a kid, and we did like the rings and the bar. I wasn't so great at the floor stuff when they're jumping around on the floor, but they have like the high beam, and there's the, you can jump around on all the trampolines, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is pretty fun.
I think it's a good introduction to fitness for people and to learn what you can actually do with your body. It's amazing seeing people do all these kinds of flips and stuff and just land it perfectly, right? It doesn't happen all the time. I've even seen a lot of people do those trampoline exercises for skateboarding or snowboarding tricks, trying to practice them, in an easier environment with less risk.
Diving is another one.
For diving, swimming and a diving. Yeah, I bet. Do you plan on doing any like 360s on your motorcycle? Is that why you're trying to do the trampoline?
Not at all.
No. Do you do any dirt riding? If any dirt riding or supermoto do you guys get into with the DRZ?
I don't really do any dirt riding. I just ride around in the yard.
Yeah. Even riding around the yard, you learn, the basic basically braking and not using the front brake too much in the dirt, so you don't tuck the front too much.
Yep.
And so is there anything going on in your life you wanted to talk about?
I'm just pretty excited for the Talent Cup. Pretty nervous too.
Yeah. I'm sure there's going to be some stiff competition, but it seems like you have a good head on your shoulders.
Yeah, I hope there's going to be some good competition. I mean, it's what racing is all about. It's all about.
Yeah, and do you have any goals for this year, whether it's top 10, top 5, win the championship? Like, what are your aspirations for this year?
I just want to go out there and do my best and keep it on two wheels.
Yeah, you know, figuring out how to go fast and not crash is probably the most important part.
Yep.
If you can do that, if you just bring it home, maybe you can have a good finish too.
Yeah.
It's a lot about, you know, managing, going as fast as possible, but also making sure you cross that finish line without falling down, because that's you can't win if you're falling down all the time.
Yeah. I'm also planning on doing a junior cup with our endurance bike that we're going to have.
Okay. So you're going to do some Moto America rounds?
Yep.
That's pretty exciting. Any particular track you're looking to hit, or I assume you're doing single events or the whole season?
Oh, I'm just going to do the last three because I won't be 14 till July.
Okay, so as soon as you crack that the age group, you'll be ready to go.
Yep.
Pretty exciting. You know, there's been a bunch of kids who popped on the scene as soon as they could, they possibly could race, and did pretty darn well. I remember Joe Roberts comes to mind. I think he was, he couldn't practice on like the Friday or something like that, if my memory is right. And then he raced on Saturday and won. So it's pretty cool to be in that kind of category.
Yeah, Blake Davis is doing pretty good in the Twins Cup as well.
Yeah, and he had a similar upbringing, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And so I met your dad a little bit, Raymond, and sounds like he had a little bit of background with racing and riding, getting you into this stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. He started, when I was younger, I used to go to the track with him, and I used to watch him race.
So he was a racer, or still is, maybe?
He was. He doesn't have time for that now with me.
Yeah, and now he's helping you fix your bikes and get everything ready and drive you to the racetrack and all that?
Yep.
And so what kind of stuff did he race?
Oh, he raced the Gixxer 600.
600 class. And what organization?
Which one was it?
Moto Series.
Oh, Moto Series, yeah. I think I raced with them once at Nelson Ledges.
That's cool. He thinks that's where he met you.
Oh, yeah, probably so. Probably back in 2012, 2013 timeframe.
Yeah.
And at that time, that track was just not very good. I think I almost sprained my ankle just walking the track. But now it's been all repaved. I haven't been back since the repave, but sounds like people are in the 107s, 108 time frames and just a couple seconds faster than they were before.
Yeah, it's a really nice track now.
You've been racing there a couple times?
Yeah.
That's your prime territory in Ohio.
Yeah, it is.
Ohio, probably mid-Ohio. Any other tracks in Ohio?
I go to Pittsburgh pretty often because I have my grandparents live out close to there.
Yeah, Pittsburgh International Race Complex. That's a pretty cool one with all the elevation and now the, you know, Moto America goes there. It's definitely elevated the status quite a bit, I'd say. And they have a United States Pro Kart Series track, that go-kart track's national level go-kart track. So it's pretty high level there. And they have that skid pad so you can do autocross events. And they're putting more grandstands in. It's awesome to see that stuff getting better.
Yeah, when I was racing minis, I actually went out there and raced on the kart track there.
Yeah, so I was flagging for you then. I worked that event for Moto America with as a track marshal. I was waving the flags if you're talking about the same event.
Yeah. I did race with OMRL for the
minis. Okay. Yeah.
The one round with the Ovales.
So how is OMRL? Do you like that organization?
Yeah, it was a pretty fun group.
And those are all minis, is that right?
Yep.
And is there a limit? It's probably 250s, or I don't know if they're allowed 450s out there. It seems powerful.
450s is the limit.
450? That'd be pretty cool. I mean, do they do any off-road section, or is it all pavement there?
Oh, it's all pavement.
Okay, so like it's super motard, they call it. But yeah, I like that. It's pretty cool to see. And I think Supermoto, the smiles to dollar ratio is off the charts. I mean, it's so cheap. It's pretty easy for people to get into it.
Yeah.
You're not spending tons of money on tires and not going through tons of gas, I would assume anyway. And if you crash, almost nothing breaks, it seems like.
Yeah.
They're pretty resilient machines.
Yeah. Not a whole lot to do with them. Just got to clean them every so often.
And are you doing some of the maintenance now?
Oh, yeah. I try to help my dad out as much as I can.
Becoming a little mechanic?
I guess you could say that.
So probably doing oil changes. And can you do brake bleeds? Or what is in your repertoire? What can you do on for mechanical stuff?
Oh, I can change tires. I can do oil changes. And when my dad's working on the motor, he tries to teach me as much as he can.
You probably change some brake pads.
Yeah.
Those aren't too bad. Or even bleeding the brakes and putting new brake fluid in. That's important every once in a while. Fork oil, you know, that's probably pretty once a year or so type of thing. But it's funny, you know, some people never replace that, but oil in your forks goes bad just like your oil in your engine does too.
Yep.
It's all nuts and bolts at the end of the day. You can just go on YouTube and research some stuff and look at the manual and ask some friends and ask your dad, and then you can pretty much figure out most stuff.
Yeah, YouTube, there's crazy things that you can find.
YouTube certified. And then do you guys normally camp at the track, or do you have a trailer or that you sleep in, or do you normally get hotels? What's your normal plan for going to the racetrack?
We have a trailer that we stay in.
And is it like a 6x9, or you got one of those like 20-30 footers?
It's about 16 by. My dad just says it's about 16 feet long.
Okay, that's not bad. Yeah, so you can fit at least a bike or two, a generator, probably some tires, and a place to sleep in there.
Yep.
That sounds great. You know, I've been working at these different events as a track marshal lately, and been going down to Florida quite a bit. I was just at the Daytona 200 working that one. And it's actually cheaper for me to fly than it is for me to drive nowadays. I mean, the gas prices are like $4 to $6 everywhere you go. It was crazy. I actually had 5 flights. I had to go from Michigan to New York to North Carolina to Daytona. And then on the way back, I went from Daytona to North Carolina to Detroit. Like, that doesn't seem efficient, but that was like the cheapest way to do it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But if you bring your bed with you, you got a nice place to stay.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you like traveling all over the place? How far have you guys been going?
We've went down to Heron Compound, which is probably our furthest, or down to, what's the national one called? Barber. Yeah, we probably went. Barber's a pretty far one as well.
Yeah, all the way in Alabama from Ohio. That's got to be like 10 hours.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it may be 12 hours for me to Alabama and 12 to, what's the other one? Road Atlanta. It's about the same distance, but it's worth it once you get there.
Yeah, that track's very nice.
For sure. And so, yeah, where can people find you online? Are you out there anywhere on the internet?
Yeah, I have an Instagram. It's Logan Monk Racing.
Are you on Facebook?
Yeah, it's the same thing for Facebook.
And Twitter, I think, too, right?
Yeah, I don't do as much on Twitter, though.
Are you a video creator? Do you have anything on YouTube?
Yeah, I have a few things. The YouTube channel is Canton Monk.
Okay. Be sure to check that out. And I'm sure you probably put some race videos or footage up there, maybe.
Yep.
That's always cool to see. You know, I think it's cool to just to get those crazy moments or maybe you get a crash in front of you. You might have it on there for 10 hours and nothing happens, but you put it on the next hour and you get like three crashes in front of you, it seems like.
Yeah, we have stuff on YouTube from when I was like 2 years old.
That's cool. You get to see the progression.
Yeah.
And what would you tell kids trying to get into the sport? Do you have any advice for people?
Just try it. And if you don't like it, then you don't have to do it. Like if your parents are forcing you to do it, like, and you're not enjoying it, like it's kind of upsetting when parents force their kids to do something they don't want to do.
Yeah. That never seems to work out in the long run.
No.
And so racing, it sounds like it's something you want to do at a professional level.
Yeah.
And what do you think about the inherent risks involved?
I think that there's equipment that can help prevent those risks, like the airbag inside of the suit. That helps.
Yeah, and technology is getting better. I just saw the other day, scrolling through Instagram, there was like leg pads that had external airbags on them. Like they're trying to do everything they can, you know, and create new products all the time. But I was just talking to someone the other day and they said, oh, racing is dangerous. But she was an airplane pilot. I'm like, see, you can do dangerous things safely or dangerous things well. There's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way to do things, just like anything. So I agree. Yeah, you can do, you can be smart about it, you know, and it sounds like you're taking the right precautions.
Yeah, as long as you know what you're doing and you have the proper equipment, shouldn't get hurt. But things happen, so.
Yeah, you just got to be prepared. Were you watching the Daytona 200 this year?
Yeah, a little bit.
It was a pretty darn close finish. And spoiler alert, Brandon Pasch won, you know, second year in a row. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
I was watching the Twins. I was watching Blake try and battle back and forth.
Heck yeah, and I think it was Anthony Maziato went ricocheting off of the wall at one point and got completely airborne and still finished on the podium.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's maybe not an ideal line, but it looked like he was drafting someone and then he realized, oh crap, the guy went too high and he was already committed to going on the outside of him and nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
But when in doubt, throttle out, right? He didn't let off, it looked like, at all.
Nah, he just powered through it.
It seems like that's the only place where we can race with walls and it's kind of okay because it's such a high banking. I did a track walk around there and I've heard them say it's 31 degrees or 33 degrees banking. But either way, it's pretty darn steep. You can actually hold on to the barrier at the very top and have your feet not be touching the ground.
It's crazy.
There's nowhere else like it that I can think of.
Yeah, there was a track like that on minis. They had this really big bank turn.
Yeah.
Kind of scary.
Was that Barber, right?
No, it was, what was it called again? I don't know. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Yeah. I know that at Barber, at they had built a kart track and it uses some sort of angled dome like shape. So I thought that's what you're talking about, but I'm sure there's other configurations that are just as crazy.
Yeah, I remember. It's called Adkins Raceway.
Oh, Adkins Raceway? Where do you think that one's located?
Just south of us.
Okay. There's so many that I don't know of. It's like I'm just getting into the supermoto scene and the minis. So it's a whole new set of tracks.
Yeah, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
That's all right. You know, sometimes that's the best place because you're never going to get any noise restrictions or people complaining it's too loud.
Yeah.
What do you think about these new electric bikes or e-bikes? Do you think you'll get one of those one day?
I don't know. Possibly.
The plus side for those is you can race in your backyard and no one would even know.
Yeah, completely silent.
Yeah, you could be racing in the parking lot and nobody would hear you.
Yep.
Do you ever go to like parking lots and set up cones and do practice like that?
Yeah. I go to a few parking lots.
And are you using cones or chalk, or how do you set up a track?
No, we use cones.
Cones and just kind of do drills?
Yep.
And then I'm sure you're just sitting there with a stopwatch, seeing if you can beat your times.
No, not really. We're just practicing.
Just seeing how it feels and trying to get the most out of your training, I would assume.
Yeah.
And so you're in middle school now? Are you homeschooled or going to like a public school?
I go to a public school.
And what are you learning nowadays?
I'm in pre-algebra for math class. We're learning about tectonic plates in science. And we're working on literature and language arts.
Okay. And do you have any idea what you want to go into for a career, or do you think racing might pan out as a career?
I hope racing will pan out.
For sure. I went into mechanical engineering for a while in college before I found racing as a viable option, but you know, now I'm running my own business and doing that pretty much full time. I got a lot of side jobs, like the quarter marshal thing, coaching. I'm a little bit of a landlord with two rentals. And now, you know, selling stuff online is pretty much my biggest cash flow because I have 34 different motorsports brands from like Driven Racing, M4 Exhaust, Bonamici, tire warmers, bike stands, trailer restraints, you know, I got all kinds of gear like boots and gloves, race suits from Revit, rain gear, all kinds of stuff. So if you guys ever need anything, I might be able to help you out with some parts or gear bags, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
For sure. You know, it's cool to be selling race parts. A lot of the stuff I sell is things that I actually used on the bike and on the racetrack. So, it's cool to give back in a different way.
Yeah, you can give a real review of the product.
Yeah, for sure. And help people out. And one of the newest products I've been selling lately is Core Moto brake lines. All kinds of different colors and fittings. And, you know, steel braided is way better than the rubber brakes that come on a lot of stock bikes. If you were to do like a 20 lap race, at a certain point, you're going to get brake fade, because those rubber lines are going to just expand and you're not going to have the right brake pressure. It's not going to feel as consistent anymore. So if you have the steel braided, that's one of the best performance upgrades you could do for a motorcycle. And it's the gift that keeps on giving. It doesn't expand. I mean, in certain situations, maybe if you're at Malaysia, you're always going to get brake fade, you know, in 120 degree weather, but it's much, much reduced.
Yeah, at Barber, we were having a brake issue. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. My dad would change out the brake pads, and I got there and feel a little worse, a little better, and then we finally figured it out.
Was it like a caliper or a rotor maybe? Or maybe even had some air in the lines?
No, it was just the brake pads we were using.
Okay, so you just swapped out the brake pads and fixed the problem?
Yep.
You know, years ago, I worked for a different sport bike parts company. And I actually was trained by, I think it was SBS, Scandinavian Brake Services. And it was cool. They came into our facility and did a whole, you know, workup of this is our history. This is how we make brake pads. And at one point, they had changed facilities from one building to a whole new building. They upgraded, they bought a new facility, and they realized that the humidity and temperature that they made their brake pads in this first room was not the exact same that was in this new room. So the new room brake pads for a couple months were coming off, and they're still testing them. They never made it to market, but they were testing them and saying, these are a totally different grip level in a worse way than the original pads from this other facility. So until they had the right humidifiers and got all the perfect temperature, all that stuff really matters when making brake pads, apparently. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, brakes play a big part in how you go around the track.
Yeah, and there's some people who will argue to forever that your rear brake is the most amount of stopping power that you need for a motorcycle. I'm like, maybe that's not the case. it seems like Harley guys, chopper guys, street guys, street riders, men and women, seem to fall into the using the rear brake all the time. And it's like on the racetrack, it's almost opposite.
Yeah, we use a ton of front brake, not a whole lot of rear.
Yeah, and a lot of people, if you look at Toprak Razgatiyazlu over in World Superbike, he's using the front brake so much, his rear tire is a foot off the ground half the time. So it's like, how could you say that your rear brake is the most amount of stopping power? It's just silly.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in the grass, it is, but...
Yeah. It depends on the situation. Yeah, if you're in the grass, you want to use like 0% front brake and 85% rear brake.
Yeah.
And use some engine braking and maybe Fred Flintstone trying to put your foot in the ground a little bit. Are you a leg dangle kind of guy?
No, not really.
It's really just a style thing, right?
Yeah. I tried it once and it like kind of helps lean the bike over at the start, but I'd rather just, yeah.
It's a good way to go through boots, right? It's that way you're scraping your foot on the ground the whole time.
Yeah.
Probably use like three boots or what, every three races you need a new set of boots maybe.
Yeah. I'm so tall too, it doesn't, my legs just hit the ground.
And so how tall are you now?
I'm 6 feet tall.
Okay, 6 feet tall, 13 years old, so you're gonna be a tall one.
Yeah.
Do you think that will help you or hurt you on the bike?
Probably hurt me a little bit because me being so tall, I won't fit as well on the bike.
So you probably plan on moving up maybe a little sooner than some of the other people to different classes?
Yep.
And you can probably move up at 16, I think, to the 600s?
Yeah.
I'm not sure when you can do the Twins Cups.
I think it's 16.
Okay. Do you think that should be lowered, the age lowered maybe, or raised?
I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings about it.
Because I've seen actually 13 or 14-year-olds on a 1000 before. I mean, just trying it out, you know, but people can do it. I don't think people get as much credit as they're given.
Yeah. I was on an R3 at 10 years old, actually.
Yeah, so see, there you can do it. Before 6 years before you can have a driver's license, you're out there on a racetrack on R3.
Yeah.
I feel like there might be some sort of exemption for if you have a racing license, you should be able to have your driver's license.
I know. I keep telling my parents that. I get so upset when it's a nice day and I want to go out for a motorcycle ride and I can't.
Yeah, and you're like, I'll keep it under 100.
Yeah.
When I was getting my license, it was actually you could be 14 and 9 months, I think it was, to start driver's ed. So as soon as I was 14 and 9 months, I was signed up for the class.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So that's how the law is in Michigan. I'm not sure how it is in Ohio.
I think it might be 15 here.
Okay.
Not sure though.
Yeah. And so it looks like you got a cat in the background.
Yeah.
A kitty cat.
Yeah, we have 3 cats.
Oh, nice. Tell me about your cats.
Well, we got this guy right here.
Oh, yeah, look at him.
Yeah, he's about 22 pounds.
A big boy.
Yeah. He was like 28 pounds when we first few months we had him.
Put him on a diet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had some cats in the past. I'd like to get another one. It's just I'm traveling so much. I don't know if I should get one right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty easy to take care of. Just got to feed them and change their litter box.
Yeah, and have someone, you know, if I'm gone, like when I went to Daytona, it was, I think, Wednesday to Monday. So that's kind of hard. I'd have to have someone come over and at least, you know, interact with them for a half hour or something like that. But they have... they have places like apps. You can hire someone, I think, dog sitting, cat sitting.
Yeah. I don't know how I'd feel about someone off the internet coming over and taking care of the cat.
Maybe a friend would be easier.
Yeah.
Pay a friend to come over. You just don't want to inconvenience them. That's all.
Yeah. We had a bunny rabbit, but she passed away.
Okay. Yeah. We had some as a kid. I think one Christmas, we were all talking about, oh, we might get a dog. And then at Christmas time, we got bunnies. Like, oh, I mean, I was kind of let down, but bunnies are cool. It's just they're kind of skittish. You know, the ones that we had anyway, they always were running away from us. It's like, come back here. but yeah, we had a black, I don't even know what the technical terms for the bunny rabbits were, but we had a black one and a gray one.
Yeah, we had a light brown one.
And they're cute. I mean, they can't really teach them to do tricks. It'd be cool, like do a backflip or something. they're fun companions. We had hamsters growing up.
We have hamsters.
A couple hamsters. They're cool furry friends.
Yeah, we have one snake as well.
It's like a zoo over there.
Yeah.
So how do you make sure that the snake doesn't get the hamsters?
Oh, we check on them every so often. Put stuff on top of its cage, make sure it doesn't get out.
Yeah. And I actually had a saltwater fish tank at one point, and all my friends were saying, oh, you should get something crazy like an octopus. And I was looking at getting an octopus, and they say you have to actually weight down and lock the cage, otherwise they will escape. They're that smart. They know how to escape out of pretty much anything unless it's locked.
Yeah, we have a few fish as well.
Yeah. It's cool to have a variety like that.
Yeah.
And do you have any siblings?
I have one younger sister.
One younger sister? And about how much younger?
2 or 3. Wait. I don't even know at this point.
It keeps changing all the time.
Yeah.
And so you get along with her pretty well?
Yeah, yes and no.
Yeah, younger sister, I'm sure there's some rivalry there.
Yeah.
You think she'll be a rider?
Nope.
Not interested?
She's a gymnast right now. So.
Okay. Does she do like those competitions or should she kind of do it for fun and training?
Yeah, she does competitions.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very good. So what's going on in your life? Anything you wanted to talk about some more?
Not really. I mean, hit all the markers. So.
Yeah. Let's see. There's some more racing coming up recently, or coming up next. I think MotoGP is going to Indonesia.
Yeah.
That should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the race in Texas that they're going to have there.
Oh, so you're going to MotoGP and Circuit of the Americas?
Yeah, I'm actually going to race there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll be working that event, actually. I'm just looking at buying plane tickets. I'll be working that as a track marshal at the side of the racetrack, either picking up motorcycles or flagging whatever they need to be done.
That's cool.
So I'll be that'll be my first MotoGP event. I'm pretty excited about doing that, putting that on my resume. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it'll be my first MotoGP race to see as well.
Nice. You'll be there with best in the world.
Yeah.
And make sure you get a photo if you can with some of those bigger racers. You always see like Mark Marquez with Valentino Rossi as a child. Like, you never know.
It's going to be nerve-wracking as well because I'm going to race there and they'll be there hopefully watching. So
yeah, it's like sometimes when you're racing, it's like, oh, make sure you do really well because there's a scout or somebody or a team manager is watching. You always got that in the back of your head.
It'll be the first race on the bike as well.
Okay, so no pressure.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Well, you'll probably have some practice time before that, so you'll get some track time to figure it out.
Not really. I mean, we might go to a few different tracks if we can.
Yeah. Sometimes it's tough to practice as a motorcycle racer. You're not getting like the same amount of time as if you were a runner or a swimmer, but there's other ways to practice. Like, I usually did a lot of mountain bike racing, the mountain bike riding just in your local trails, because if you're going fast enough, you're pushing the front tire, you're pushing the rear tire, and it's relatively cheap. You know, you don't really have to pay for crash damage or you're not paying for gas. You really don't have to travel anywhere. For me anyways, I have a whole bunch of trails within riding distance. I don't even have to drive anywhere, which is really nice.
Yeah, I think the closest place we would probably have to drive.
Okay. I even created a little bit of mountain bike trail in my backyard during the pandemic times. They said, don't go out of your house. So I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? So I just created this old, I have like woods near my house on both sides and like the back and then the side of my house. So I just used that area and carved out some of the path that was already there and made my little half mile loop.
Yeah, it's sweet.
So that way, so it takes a little bit of the edge off if I'm bored, don't want to go anywhere, I can just go ride in my backyard.
Yeah. When I'm riding my dirt bike, I normally just do a big old circle around the house.
Yeah. And so you've been following different race series like Flat Track or Supercross. Do you watch any of those?
No. I just mainly watch Moto America and some MotoGP races.
What do you think of the baggers nowadays?
Those things are pretty cool.
It's like a 600-pound Harley Davidson, but there's also Indian. And actually, Indian, I think, won one of the races for the baggers this weekend. I saw there's Patricia Fernandez was out there, female rider. Saw another female, August Nord, was out there in the 600 class. James Rispoli in the baggers. Taylor Knapp was out there. You had a lot of big names coming out.
Yeah.
Kyle Wyman, Travis Wyman, and from all those Harleys, an Indian one. I know one of the races, so that's, they're always trying to get supremacy and see who's on top, but Indian seems like they want it bad.
Yeah.
You got Kyle trying to defend his championship, and his brother, I think, finished ahead of him in one of the races, so I'm sure there's going to be a sibling rivalry there.
Yeah, one of them's going to want it more than the other.
But you can't throw it down the road. Those things are hundreds of pounds. It's like a time and a half times a 600.
Yeah, those things are pretty heavy.
And how much does your bike weigh? It's a couple hundred? I say like maybe 300.
You talking about the 300 or the Aprilia?
Well, either one. I was thinking probably the 300 is probably maybe 300 pounds.
300 to 350-ish. Yeah.
350. Okay. So not too much off of 600, really.
No, not really.
Very good. Very good. So, yeah, this is my 91st podcast. I've been doing this quite a while now, but I still have like four or five of them still ready to post before I get to yours. So it might be a couple of weeks, but I'll do my best to get it done.
Yeah, it's okay. I know you have a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, just trying to do this in the spare time, you know, when I can.
Yep.
And so tell me about some of your sponsors. I'm sure there's some companies helping you out still.
Yeah, we have Vortec, Cycle Gear, Blood Lubricants, and a few others.
And what does Vortex do?
Mainly just provides parts for the bike, sprockets, everything else, rear sets, clip-ons.
Yeah, I've used Vortex myself, and Vortex was a sponsor of mine for many years. I always loved their rear sets, and I use their clip-ons. Pretty sure they make gas caps too. That you don't need to have you use your key anymore, which is nice at the racetrack. It's like, where's my key? It's somewhere in my toolbox. I don't need my key to turn on my bike anymore. Most people eventually go to like a keyless ignition type of thing, because your ignition's like 10 pounds. It's you know, meant to be not broken into, but you don't really need all that stuff on the racetrack.
Yeah.
It's nice to get rid of all that stuff. So yeah, that's good to have. And blood lubricants, I'm sure, you know, chain lube and bike wash maybe, and all kinds of oils.
Yeah, oils and everything else you said, pretty much.
Very good. Let's see, I'm just gonna look at your list here and see if there's anything else on your list we didn't talk about yet. One of the things on here is friends at the track and how adults treat kids coming up in the sport.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends at the track, a lot of riders around my age. It's fun to go out there and ride with them.
Yeah, it's a big camaraderie. You know, it's a little bit different than playing soccer or hockey, where you might be on the same team, but you're still competing against each other to try to best each other up so you can be maybe on the first line rather than the second line. You're always trying to show each other up in a way, right? And you are at the same time when you're racing, but you're just on a different team most of the time. So it seems different. I don't know. What do you think?
I race with Eli Banish, and he's a really nice kid. He's pretty fast too.
Yeah. And I'm sure you have... You can learn from each other too, right? If you see him going around the corner 10 miles an hour faster than you, you're like, oh, I did something wrong there. I can improve, you know, and try to follow him some more.
Yeah, we were comparing lap times.
And so you kind of, you help each other out a little bit, it sounds like?
Yeah, he was my endurance racing partner for last year.
Okay. So where do you draw the line about helping out your competitors?
I don't really know. I just find, like, if they're having an issue with gearing or something, like, we'll tell them, hey, try this or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's any sabotage there. It sounds like you generally, if someone has a problem, you want to help them out.
Yeah.
And it seems pretty common to even lend parts to your competition. Is that right?
Yeah, we had to borrow a few parts when I crashed at Nelson.
Yeah, because you're all the way in the middle of nowhere, and it's not like there's a parts shop usually right next door.
Nope.
Now, sometimes I met a guy who travels around to the racetrack. You know, I sell parts 100% online, so I don't really have a ton of inventory to bring to the racetrack. But some people bring trailers full of parts, and they don't really sell much online, so it's just different business models. But if you're at the racetrack, it's really helpful to have those guys there.
Yeah.
Because if you're coming from 12 hours away and you need a handlebar and no one else has it, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, you kind of need that one singular piece.
And there might be somebody else with a handlebar at the track, but it might be the wrong size handlebar.
Yeah. It's like putting together a puzzle. You got to find the right piece.
Do you guys carry a lot of spare parts when you go down to the events?
Yeah, we carry a ton of spare parts with us.
Do you have like a checklist? Like you have three handlebars and 2 foot pegs and one rear set, or do you just have like a little bit of everything?
Oh yeah, we have a checklist.
That's good. So if you run out of three handlebars, you grab another?
Yeah.
And What about things like suits? Do you have a backup suit or backup helmet?
We have a backup helmet. We don't have a backup suit, though.
That's expensive.
Yeah.
And it's actually not too often that the suits rip open. They seem to be pretty resilient.
Yeah, especially if you crash on the grass and not so much on the pavement.
Yeah, grass is a lot easier. It doesn't rip it up as much.
Yep.
But, you know, it was funny. I just talked to someone today that was I said I was at the racetrack and someone crashed and they said, oh, no, are they all cut up? Like, how is their skin? I said, you know, I've crashed 15 times on the racetrack. I've never had once a cut or abrasion on my skin. They're like, oh, wow, I didn't think about that. People don't realize that we wear leather suits with armor and boots and gloves. And she's like, oh, I didn't even think that it was mandatory to wear that stuff.
Sometimes people just don't have common sense.
Yeah, it's like, it's a mandatory thing. Otherwise, they won't even let you onto the racetrack. It's not an option.
Yeah.
But do you wish there was more gear? Like, is there anything? So I've seen some people wear those neck braces or have airbags, but the airbags are becoming mandatory for pro racing now.
Yeah, I have an airbag in my suit that I use.
Is it one of those, like a CO2 cartridge with a drawstring, or is it one of those that has accelerometers inside of it and computers?
It's the Alpine Star inside suit airbag.
Okay, so that's like it's one of the best things you can wear.
Yeah, it's called a tech airbag.
Tech airbag, and it does your whole torso, or how does that work?
It does around your shoulders and I think around your collarbone.
Okay. I've heard that it takes 8 pounds of pressure to break your collarbone if you put it in the right place.
It's crazy.
Not too much. Yeah, I've broken my collarbone, but it wasn't from racing. I was playing hockey in a summer league. It didn't even really matter. It was just for fun. And I was reaching for a puck behind the net, and I was reaching with my left hand, and someone hit me on the board and broke my collarbone. And I didn't even fall down. And I got a concussion at the same time. I was like, that was a completely unnecessary hit from behind. But the thing was, I didn't even know it was broken. I skated back to the bench, and I was like, I heard something pop that didn't feel quite right. But my shoulder's like hanging down like this now. And I didn't realize it. I get back to the bench and I'm like, put me in, coach. And he's like, no, I think you're done for the day. I went back to the bench, went to the hospital, and realized it was all broken. So it doesn't take much to break that. So having an airbag over that point there is probably really helpful.
Yeah. I had a pretty big crash at Nelson.
Yeah. Well, how did that go? Where was that? What turn?
Coming out of the carousel.
Okay, so you had quite a bit of speed.
Yeah.
High side?
The rear slid out and I caught it, and I was like going straight, and you could see the tire marks on the track that were just.
Yeah.
And then I got into the grass and I just was heading towards the tire wall, so I kind of threw the bike.
And I assume you've probably had a couple of crashes now?
Yeah, I had a few.
And does it deter you from the sport, or just makes you want to get better?
So after that big crash at Nelson, I went out and I got first the next day.
So it didn't slow you down at all. You made a mistake and just avoid those issues.
Yeah.
So what do you do after a crash like that to mentally come back?
I'll just try to like remember what happened in the situation, and once I figure out what I did wrong, then I'm like, oh, I need to make sure I don't do this again.
A lot of it, I think, is just being smoother, like maybe getting on the gas a little slower, a little bit easier, or if it's on the brakes, maybe not using so much brake pressure when you're leaning over. But it's hard to find that fine line, you know, stay on the limit all the time.
Yeah, I think the main issue was the lean angle that I had with that.
Too much lean angle for too much throttle?
Yep.
Sometimes people talk about it as a point system. Like you have 100 points, you can use 50% on braking, and you can use the other 50% on your lean angle, but you can't do 100% of both. because then you just wash out and lose out all your traction points.
Yep.
And it changes over time. Like you might be braking 100%, but not turning any. But as you tip in, you know, you got to slowly let off the brake pressure so that you don't overtax your tires and slide out.
That's another thing with endurance race. You got to watch your tire wear.
Yeah, and I've seen endurance teams go all the way to the cords on race tires. Like, you can do it. It's possible. You have grip a long ways.
I've seen that at the track as well.
Yeah, but you can't if you have cords on your tires. You are not going to be getting maximum, you know, throttle out of the corners. You're going to be tiptoeing around, trying not to crash, basically, I would assume. You're just trying to get through the corners and get back onto the meat of the tire so you have the most grip, because normally it's like the size of a credit card on the ground of your tire contact patch. It's a very small amount. But actually, a lot of tires have more tire on the ground when they're at full lean than they do when they're straight up and down.
Yeah, it's the way they make the tire that all depends on that.
Yeah, and that's why your tire pressure is so important. So it has the right, you know, stiffness to the carcass of the tire so that you have, you know, the right feel and everything. It takes a lot to make everything go right.
Yep.
And so you've been riding and racing for how many years now?
Seven years, including minis.
So quite a while. And sounds like you got a good future ahead of you. I'm excited to see you at the track this year.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'll hopefully be out there riding with you pretty soon, but I'm just trying to save my money and work on my business, trying to keep grow everything and do this podcast, you know, once or twice a week. I'm just happy to connect and hopefully share your story a little bit.
Thank you.
For sure, man. I'm sure you got a wall just like this at home behind me.
I got a shelf full of thin metal plates there.
You just keep the plates and get rid of the wood?
No, I have everything that they give me. So
yeah, they were just sitting in the attic for so long. I was like, I should do something with them.
Yeah, I don't really do much with them. I just look at them.
Yeah. It's cool to go back and see, you know, those different races. Although sometimes you look at them and like, I forget which one was which anymore.
Yeah, I can't keep track of the ones that I have.
Do you race up in different classes? Like when I was racing, I raced on the 600 class, but I would also race the 750s and 1000s. Are you able to do that with your bike?
Yeah, I'm able to do that with my 300.
And what's it like competing in higher classes with the 300?
It's pretty hard, especially when you go up against like 690s, KTM 690s.
But you can get them in the corners, and I'm sure in the turns and the braking zones, just when the straightaways come, you just got to be as tucked as possible.
Yeah, I was actually able to beat a 690 on my 300 before.
Heck but yeah.
Thing was is that there was a super long front straight. So every time I'd pass him right before like the front straight, he just passed me right back.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but you know you can compete when you're staying with him.
Yeah.
I remember one of my first ever track days, I passed a Hayabusa. I'm like, oh, I'm the fastest guy ever. You know, you don't realize that the Hayabusa is not a good track bike. It might be a good track bike for straight line stuff at the drag strip, but not anywhere where turns are involved.
No.
So yeah, man, that's about an hour. So I'll be sure to get this edited and posted. And it won't be too long before that goes online. I'm excited to get this one out for you. So thanks for talking to me. And it was a pleasure.
Nice talking with you too.
So take care and have a good one.
All right. See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.